Who chooses whom, right? Do voters choose the politicians, or do politicians choose the voters through the district map process? I mean, that's just an open, fair-on question about today's political atmosphere and the arena that we're in. There are states and legislators considering redistricting in the middle of this decade. Normally, that's saved, like Montana's process is, after a census. And it's Katie Bar the Doors, a recent Supreme Court decision says that racial discrimination is discrimination, whether it's white, black, or whatever. But you go back to a 2019 case, and that allowed parties to consider partisan objectives in districting. There are some things to consider here today. Dan Stusik's with us here. He is a member of the Montana Apportionment, the District and Apportionment Commission. And then also Representative Braxton Mitchell with us out of House District 5, a legislator, House Majority Whip. We'll go all over this one here today on Voices of Montana. As I mentioned, a couple of Supreme Court cases. One most recently has a lot of people discussing, do we have racial biases in our district mapping process? And the Supreme Court just said in Louisiana versus Kayla, I think is how that is, a case out of Louisiana there, that no, you just can't create these districts based on race. But then you go back to a 2019, and then they left it open to the states. Then you go back to a 2019 Supreme Court ruling that essentially said that partisan objectives, that states and legislatures are free to pursue partisan objectives. So I'm a little bit confused to where we're at right now. The Equal Protection Clause, I don't know why this can't be a pure, and I know we talk about politics being in the gray area an awful lot. I don't know why this area should be so gray. It seems like you've got it's a simple math and then a formula to apply that math. There is allowed some leeway, and that is what has been abused. I mean, leeway should be allowed in some of that, but that leeway was abused in Montana. It has for years. I've seen it. I've talked about it. I talked about a district that I lived in Missoula, and it was, we were in the Clark Fork Valley, right, which is completely east of the city of Missoula. And then south is the Bitterroot Valley. And Lolo, you know, a lot more population than the Clark Fork Valley. And in between, there's a whole mountain range. And there was nothing that connected us to the Bitterroot in terms of continuity, our culture, you know, just the fact that we were Montanans. But they created a map that grabbed a big part of the Clark Fork Valley and then went over the mountain range for a little sliver of a population into Lolo. And why do you create that? Because, you know, historically, you understand that rural populations tend to be more conservative, those urban populations. Well, in fact, we can talk about that here with L.A. County. The county itself is bigger than 39 states. With nearly 10 million people in it. And so there are a lot of reasons why this has to be ordered, and there's a lot of reasons why there should be some leeway. But where are we at now? Let's welcome our guest here. It's been a little bit lengthy to get to him, but Dan Stusik is a Republican member of the Montana District and Apportionment Commission. And I thought I was done trying to say districting and apportionment, but not quite yet. MDAC. Also attorney and a faithful Montana Grizzly fan, too, a grassroots guy I've known for some time. Dan, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Didn't mean to put you to sleep with that monologue, but had some things.
Well, no, I'm honored to be here today. You know, I think it's like Stephen Colbert's last show, and it's, you know, who's going to be his guest, and it's like, here I am, you know, honored to be on Tom Schultz's first show back. You know, it really appreciate it.
Boy, you have gotten really full of it. Just kidding. Representative Braxton Mitchell with us as well, the House Majority Whip out of House District 5 as well, one of the youngest members of Montana's legislature, and you know, understood what the redistricting did to his district up in the Columbia Falls area, and still won re-election as well, House District 5. Good morning, Braxton. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me. I think it's the first time on Voices of Montana, and look forward to the discussion.
Well, it's not the first time we've talked about you on Voices of Montana, being a legislator and a good one too. I really appreciate your approach as well. Let's start. I mean, we got there's a lot to cover here too. But Dan, I'm going to have you, and you're an attorney as well. Go into this Louisiana decision here and your analysis of it and our country's understanding of it at this point.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I had the ability to serve on our last district and apportionment commission here in Montana. Was appointed in 2019. The commission is officially dissolved as of a few years ago. But anyway, still obviously pay attention to this. Happy to chat today about the Calais decision and its effects on Montana and nationally. In 2023, I think, and going back to actually pre-23, there was a lawsuit in Louisiana, the state of Louisiana, on the Voting Rights Act, Section 2, about equal protection, because Louisiana had a certain percentage of black residents. I think it was near 30%. But only had one of the six congressional districts in the state, and so the plaintiff sued and won the election in the federal or won the case in federal district court, and the court mandated that Louisiana have a proportional representation, and they mandated that they draw a second black majority district in Louisiana for two of the six or one third. So that was appealed. The Supreme Court stayed the decision per the Purcell doctrine, where it was too close to an election. They didn't want to upset the apple cart, so they allowed the map to stay in place at that time. However, dismissed it for that reason because it was too close to an election. Move forward, more conservatively aligned groups sued, saying that that was an illegal, that decision was unconstitutional based on racial discrimination. And so Calais was a white member or white representative or from Louisiana, and they sued. And then this case has gone up to the Supreme Court. On April 29th, the Supreme Court ruled that indeed the Louisiana map was drawn with racial intent and was a violation and did not meet the strict scrutiny requirements required by the court in order to maintain that. So the court invalidated the map in Louisiana and narrowed the scope of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and essentially has opened up the floodgates a little bit to states' activity, which we're seeing in the news across the country.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Representative Mitchell, House Majority Whip, one of the youngest members of our legislature, you wrote a recent op-ed where this case, came home for you. In a lot of ways, you were joined by Representative Terry Nelson in this, and it was published pretty wisely. It's time to end Montana's race-based gerrymandering. This is at the end of April. Talk about that. Talk about what you saw in this decision and how that applies to you as a legislator on the ground.
Yeah, so kind of follow the process, or kind of follow some of the Supreme Court ruling. There's a leak that they were potentially going to have a decision on the Voting Rights Act, just like they did, just like there was a leak on the abortion thing just a couple of years ago. That's a whole other problem. So it was kind of following that for about 2-3 weeks, and then obviously they ended up making the decision, which kind of gutted those protections, and started looking at these maps across the state. And anybody who looks at the maps across the state, you can tell that there's clearly race-based decisions in a couple of these Senate districts and House districts. And so once that decision was made, I decided to put a piece together and talk with Terry. Terry approved the language and we got it out there. And, this isn't, trying to go after the Native American population at all, but this is just simply saying that based off the Supreme Court ruling that, that these maps, are unconstitutional. They were drawn with race-based intent and they're just drawn so awkwardly. And, it's time that we get back to fair maps and, not draw maps based on race.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I think that makes a lot of sense for people as we're looking at the neutrality of our representation. I think there are other people out there who understand the importance of competitiveness as well as that's one of their agenda items. Dan, and I know in creating Montana's maps, that was a big sticking point. You guys had a number of criteria, and they were solid criteria. And then there's that little gray area criteria regarding population swing and the fact that that 2019 ruling where states are free to pursue partisan objectives. Does that not confuse this almost entirely?
Yeah, you're referring to the Russo v. Common Cause, the North Carolina case where the Supreme Court allowed the North Carolina congressional map to stay in place and basically ruled that it was a non-justiciable issue, a political question for the legislature there to decide.
Yeah.
Because unlike Montana, the legislature controls it. So it is a confusing framework. And, redistricting has become a hot topic. Typically, it only comes up due to a court case. Maybe one state will have to redistrict, as a result of a case mid-decade. But now we're seeing this, pressure across the country, east to west coast. And, we did have a competitiveness metric in Montana that was optional. But in effect, what I would say is the way the maps were drawn is ultimately they were drawn in a way where in the general election, they are very uncompetitive. And so we will see these primaries here in less than 2 weeks. We'll see results. I think there's obviously a lot of contested races, particularly on the Republican side. But unfortunately, even though the competitiveness was discussed, when it comes to this fall's general election, I think Montana voters will see very few competitive elections between the parties. Having questions and discussions over ideas between the parties, because the maps were drawn in a way to almost eliminate competitiveness in Montana's legislative maps. So, it's unfortunate that the primary election is ultimately going to be more consequential than even the general.
I always hoped that there would be some kind of challenge to that eventual map as well. And we'll talk about that process and maybe we will try to get into reform efforts as well. Representative Mitchell, describe some of the examples, again, looking at your op-ed here, where you believe that this system needs to be right-sided.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the clearest examples, so if you look at the map, I know a lot of folks probably haven't seen the full map of what the state legislative districts look like compared to the congressional districts. So congressional districts, we have two districts. We have the Eastern District and the Western District since 2022 because due to population increases. And then the legislature, we have 50 Senate districts and 100 House districts, and two House districts make up a Senate district. Most of these House districts that create up a Senate district are pretty compact districts. They follow the criteria, keeping communities of interest together. It's drawn, it seems like in fair ways, but you look at some of these districts, particularly in the Browning area. There's one in Browning that House District 16, which goes from Browning and Cutbank area and then kind of goes down the mountains there and goes all the way into the St. Ignatius area. And that's a very clear example of one of these districts where it's clearly and blatantly gerrymandered on a race-based purpose. And then as well as Senate District 16 in eastern Montana, which takes in, the bottom half of the Havre area and goes all the way through the Fort Belknap tribe and then goes all the way through Wolf Point. And it's pretty much drawn like a muskrat. And that one, if you look at the map, it's a pretty clear example. I think there's an argument that can be made also potentially about Senate District 46 potentially, but it's definitely Senate District 8, Senate District 16, and maybe a little bit of Senate District 46. So right there is five, House seats and potentially, two and or three Senate seats.
Yeah, thank you. And I think anybody who understands this, it might take a little while to understand the process, but I think once you do, I think you can see pretty clear evidence of what we would consider gerrymandering. We've got more talking about gerrymandering here today, and there's a few states where it stands out pretty notably. The New England states, they send 21 Democrats, 0 Republicans to the U.S. House of Representatives, even though there's about 35% Republican vote in those states. You look at the national election with 2024, the popular vote, 49.8% to Republicans, 48.3% to Democrats. and the representation in the House of Representatives relatively equal to that too. So, you know, we're looking at it happening in states and in particular, like California. The Democratic vote in California was 60% in this last election, 2024. But with that, they won 83% of the seats. There were 40% Republican votes, and they only have 17% representation. And I think those kind of states stand out as to why gerrymandering is done in the first place. It's done very much for partisan objectives, but also, you know, stands out in terms of how do we get competitive, equal protection, equal representation. Issues to solve. Dan Stusik is with us, a former member now, but a Republican member of the Montana District Apportionment Commission, MADAC, and also, as I mentioned, an attorney and a faithful Montana Grizzly fan. We celebrate the victories together and mourn together from time to time. Representative Braxton Mitchell is with us as well. House District 5 out of the Columbia Falls area. Family grew up there. Knows Montana like the back of his hand. One of the youngest members of the Montana House of Representatives and House Majority Whip.
And also a Grizz fan as well.
Hey, nice to hear that, Braxton. I'll be texting you then, too. So big thanks. Let's take this call. I mean, we got a kind of a shorter segment here, and Nancy's been standing by. Nancy, good to hear from you, listening in Roundup on our mighty 790 KGHL based out of Billings here. What do you got?
Well, good morning, Tom, and welcome back. We really did miss you. We missed your sense of humor and your sharpness and sarcasm, you know, but we just love you.
Oh, thank you.
But I got to tell you, good morning, Braxton. I'm so glad to talk with you. I just want to say that I love this heated debate that we're having nationally on redistricting. And this proves that our Constitution is working. Our founding fathers must have had a crystal ball when they drew this this miracle of a document up for us. Our Constitution is protecting us right now. It is working in our favor. We are a country of checks and balances. Yes, there's a lot of corruption, and we're seeing it in states like California. And look what just happened in Virginia. Our Supreme Court, threw that redistricting out. Now the rural residents of Virginia have representation. And I have no fear. I am delighted that this argument is going on nationwide, and it's going to save us as a country. It's going to educate us more into the power of our Constitution of the United States of America. And God bless our founding fathers. And Braxton, I'm glad you're younger than I am. I know much younger. And so I love to talk to people who are younger and in politics, because you're our future as a country. And I just want to tell everybody, Memorial Day weekend, it is a remembrance, and God bless America, and God bless all of you.
All right, Nancy, I appreciate that. And high praise for Representative Braxton Mitchell, Braxton, and then also the question of legality here. And she's happy that we're having this discussion, and I am too. I guess, you know, as long as we get an unbiased kind of outcome here. Dan, give us a sense of, as an attorney and someone, again, a former member of this commission, give us a sense of, can we get through all these court rulings and get to a place where the voters are truly electing their electorate or their representation, I mean?
You know, yeah, thanks, Tom. Big question there. I wish I had the answer, but I would say I'm less optimistic on the national level that things will get more, you know, fair, I guess, quote unquote fair, or districts that are drawn compactly and, you know, with communities of interest in mind. And it's happening certainly on the right and the left. And I think that we'll just continue to see, you know, we've seen a lot of movement recently in the South with more Republican districts being drawn. Next go round, I think states like Washington, Oregon, we've already seen California, Colorado will draw more Democratic districts, and as a pushback going to the extreme on the Democratic side. But in Montana, I do have a little bit of hope. Nancy mentioned our Constitution. You know, she was noting the federal Constitution. Unfortunately, in my opinion, the Montana Constitution has not worked well in this. It doesn't lay out much in regards to restricting gerrymandering. And our commission is supposed to come together, Republicans and Democrats, to nominate somebody who, you know, who is truly, you know, a nonpartisan, who should be, you know, kind of districts in Montana above partisan interests. But unfortunately, you know, that has not happened. So what happens is the Supreme Court in Montana, the last three cycles, has chosen the nominee, you know, without input really from the public. And so I wish we could get back, and I'm hopeful that maybe with some Supreme Court races here in the future, we can maybe get somebody who's truly, you know, a nonpartisan, who's not drawing to look to draw with partisan intent. So I'm hopeful for Montana in our next redistricting process, perhaps a little less hopeful on the national level.
I've only got like a minute and a half here, and so maybe just tease this, Representative Braxton Mitchell, and we'll talk more about it in the next segment upcoming here. What kind of reform efforts are you guys looking at? And I mean that's kind of cutting to the chase a little bit here. Are there some?
Yeah,
go ahead and tease it for us. And
yeah, I'll try and crank this out in a minute here. So yeah, so basically what happened? Well, so kind of touching on what Dan said. So the past three redistricting cycles that I can at least look back to, this quote unquote independent person at the Supreme Court, which we all know is not independent. They, you know, they run as independent, but they're not. They picked a Democrat donor to be the middle person who's supposed to be, by the per the Constitution and per the criteria, an independent. And so, you know, if you're donating to major political parties within a 10-year period, you wrote a bill that says if you were to give money within a 10-year period to a major party candidate, that you cannot be selected as that person in the redistricting for the redistricting commission. That was House Bill 711 I wrote for this past session. Speaker Lear sponsored it, and we got to sign into law. So hopefully we'll be able to crank down on some of these Democrat donors being selected as the chair and actually going to a true independent for this spot.
That might be hard to find, right? Because you want somebody who's engaged in the process. And if you get engaged, it's hard to do that without your checkbook, too. Gerrymandering. Oh, I should have it in front of me here. What was it there? I should have looked it up. I'm sitting here talking to guests and things like that during the break. But it goes back to like the late 1800s, is it? I think it was in Massachusetts. There was a governor whose last name was Jerry, and he redistricted the whole state, I think. It wound up looking like a salamander. So, oddly enough, that's where gerrymandering, the term comes from. But, essentially it is, states creating legislative districts that will favor one party or the other. The Supreme Court just recently ruled that you can't do that, when it comes to race, because that's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause, right? But they did not rule. They kind of left it to the states. They said that's not up to the feds about pursuing partisan objectives. I have trouble understanding, you know, the difference between race objectives and partisan policy or party objectives. But I guess there's a fine line there. I'm not even sure we'll have a chance to explore it. That's what we're doing here today on Voices of Montana. Dan Stusik is a guest, a former Republican member of the Montana Districting and Apportionment Commission, MADAC, also an attorney and a longtime friend. Representative Braxton Mitchell, one of the youngest members of the House of Representatives, House Majority Whip at that, did survive a redistricting remap drawing of his district, House District 5. Up in the Columbia Falls area. Both these guys are grassroots Montana people. Thank you guys for being here. Let's get to this question. We got a caller in here too, and I think that'll it'll throw out some discussion for us too. So Carl, listening in Conrad, I'm going to assume that's out of that great signal out of Great Falls, KQDI. How you doing, Carl? Thanks for coming on.
Okay. The question is, how come we can't divide it up by counties? So many counties get a representative. And if they can't find anybody to run, the governor just appoints Farmer Joe.
Well, and that's a fair question. Why? What are our parameters here? Counties make a lot of sense, except that we need 100 districts and we have 56 counties. Dan, you know, you and I, when you guys were going through this process, we've talked about this, and those priority categories, they make a lot of sense. It's the gray area to me that was abused in this last map generation.
Yeah, well, thanks, Carl, for the question. I'm going to let a little bit of my my nerd show here. But, Montana used to district by counties for a long time under our previous constitution. However, that was done in many states around the country. However, in 1964, there was a Supreme Court case, Wesby versus Sanders, where the Supreme Court said that it was, an unequal protection case. You know, you can't. The districts were so far lopsided that, they interpreted as saying districts need, in order to represent citizens, be as nearly in size as practicable. So that instituted, it reforms around the country. So the county model was no longer viable, particularly in a state like Montana, where we have, Garfield and Petroleum counties with, hundreds of voters versus, Yellowstone and Missoula with tens of thousands. So that's due to Supreme Court case in the 60s that we can no longer district by county. And certainly, as everyone knows, Montana's constitution was then adopted in 71, 72. And so and then we were aware of that. So unfortunately, due to Supreme Court, well, not unfortunately, anyway, my opinion doesn't matter, but we cannot do that anymore because of a federal case.
And that would be the same thing for reservations, I presume, as well.
Yeah, we do. Any district has to be, as equally as practical. In Montana, it was plus or minus 5%. So every district is pretty close to the numbers. However, we did keep counties in mind. We tried to keep counties whole where possible, to not divide counties. If you look at the congressional map, it was equal population on the east and the west. And only one county, Ponderay, was divided, and because counties was a big factor in, but because of the difference in size, we couldn't stick to that principle across the board.
Now that's a premier principle as well. The population, contiguous counties or areas are also is also another one of those priority principles. Lay out because they were laid out for you, I think, Dan. What those main principles are to try and follow in creating these districts?
Yeah, the three ones that are required in Montana, required by law, are compact and contiguous. Those are the words in our Supreme Court or in our Constitution. Because we were so early in adopting our commission, those words don't have much teeth to them. What does compact mean? There's multiple ways to consider that. And then the third factor is the Voting Rights Act. Which we started this conversation talking about and the implication of the Clay case in making sure that, in Montana historically, we don't dilute or split, reservations for racial or partisan purposes. But then secondarily, we had all these optional criteria, communities of interest, counties, keeping them whole, keeping the population was a mandatory one. We tried to, in an area like, can you get there from one district to the other? Like a place like Cook City in the mountains, make sure that was an illogical district. And so, transportation routes, et cetera, historical trends. So we had all this optional criteria to look at, which, depending on which one you emphasize or in which community, you can draw a pretty partisan, you can find an explanation with about any of these in any district to, justify, any sort of partisan map drawing. And one criteria might work to justify this district here and then another one in another area. So I don't feel like they were uniformly applied across the state. And hopefully in the future we can tighten that up, or whoever the future commissioners are can tighten that up.
Right. And there was a lot of criticism, and I thought it very fair about that process as well. And Representative Mitchell had noted, it's kind of written in stone because our state Supreme Court, the commission is made up of two designated from the Democratic Party, two designated from the Republican Party, and a commission chair was supposed to be practical in this and unbiased, because oftentimes you're going to get a 2-2 decision. And so it's the commission chair that breaks that tie. I've seen it. I almost call it a hard fact about this, that those commissioners have been very liberal Democrats who have voted with the Democratic parties in that commission, apportionment commission. Again, that's just my take on that. Let's go to Representative Braxton Mitchell. And Braxton, give us your take as well on this. And we want to talk about some reform efforts out there. We kind of hit about how difficult it might be because it's going to have to come from the constitutional level, or maybe it doesn't. What are you hearing out there, the reform efforts that you like and maybe some that you don't?
Yeah, so I think for us to get there, and it's probably going to have to take a lawsuit, and it wouldn't happen in this election cycle. Obviously, our primaries are coming up here in about 12 days, so we're definitely getting close. In a lot of states, the legislature redraws their maps. It's done every 10 years. Obviously, right now we're seeing some mid-decade redistricting, of course, because of what happened. But our constitution is pretty clear that this commission or a commission, draws our map. So I think it's going to take, probably going to take a lawsuit again, and we'll just have to go from there. I know this next legislative session, there's going to be some calls and efforts from us in House leadership and maybe some folks in the Senate as well to try and get there. But I think we're still kind of unsure because it's very unprecedented, right? But it's still something we need to address because, again, these maps are unconstitutional per the United States Supreme Court ruling.
What have you heard maybe other states are doing, or maybe they're restructuring their commissions? What have you heard that you think will help us, again, not draw conservative or liberal districts, but draw truly politically neutral districts as much as possible?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a better question for Dan. I mean, the compactness thing is obviously a big thing. Communities of interest together is a big thing. And, competitiveness is something you also want to get with all three of those. Right. And so, there's a lot of clear examples where that criteria wasn't met. In my district, for instance, that I used to represent, I cover the Columbia Falls area as a whole, up the North Fork communities, the Canyon communities, and down into Essex, and that made a really compact district. Well, what they did in this next cycle, and this doesn't really fit into the discussion today, but it's just a clear example of, communities of interest not being drawn together. They took the Columbia Falls area, where I grew up there, and then took the city part and merged it into East Whitefish, which, definitely not two communities of interest, I can tell you that much. Different tax bases, different people, different politics. You got the cat and dog rivalry up there, of high school sports. And they took the rural parts of Whitefish and Columbia Falls and put that into a separate district, merged that down into Whitefish, and then took the Canyon communities, dropped that down into the more rural parts of the Columbia Falls outer area, and merge that towards the Kalispell area. So there's a lot of examples, clearly, of gerrymandering. We did see a little bit of population growth in those areas, but there was no reason why those districts, and I know Dan fought really hard to try and keep the status quo in that district, but again, when you have a commission made up the way it is, they did all that to create a Senate district for Democrats, because in the flathead, the only way a Democrat can win anything is if it includes Whitefish. So they basically made two districts that compiled Whitefish. And again, the complete opposite of keeping communities of interest together. I know I kind of went on there, but there's a lot of examples across the state of, just blatant gerrymandering, but from a race-based perspective, there's definitely quite a few districts.
Any legislative kind of reforms, any low-hanging fruit there that might help?
Yeah. I can jump in here, Tom.
Sorry.
Go ahead. I had one, and then Braxton can turn. Yeah, give it, share your thoughts, certainly. Legislative, I'm less hopeful for. In Montana, it's all in the Constitution. It's just tricky. But however, there are all these, we see these people running around our, downtowns and events gathering signatures for, whether it's quote unquote dark money or to get some independent on the ballot, et cetera. What I think is we see, these large quote unquote philanthropists donating money to more of these, these causes to get things on our ballot, bypassing the legislature. I think, the easiest way would be to get some of these, very wealthy Americans, maybe who are principally against gerrymandering, to go to states like Montana and to put something on the ballot, talk to voters. They'll say, oh, we don't like gerrymandering, and they shouldn't, and they don't. However, so that's what I see as maybe the easiest path would be to get on a question like this on the Montana ballot to put more teeth into anti-gerrymandering measures in our Constitution. I think Representative Steve Fitzpatrick, tried to put a bill on the ballot in 2023, using progressive measures from California and Washington's constitution, or California and Colorado's constitutions. And it was, and Democrats and a few Republicans voted against that to limit gerrymandering and to allow Montanans to vote on that measure. So, and I think there's possibly some hope, but I think it would take some of our wealthier citizens, maybe who have good intentions, or, you know, say they do on other causes, to jump into this fray and to limit it nationwide.
Yeah, the constitutional amendment is very serious, and so you want that language to be very tight as well. I only got like a minute left here, so Representative Mitchell, you know, maybe wrap it up with your thoughts here, and period. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, no, again, I know I've touched on it a couple of times. You know, the reality is that our districts here in the state, a couple of them are in violation of the Supreme Court ruling. Again, in a lot of states, the legislature redraws the map, but we don't do that here. And we're going to have to find ways and a way to get this map changed in the upcoming session, whether that's, through a ballot referendum, or whether that's us as the legislature calling on, or the governor calling on this commission to re-meet or to reestablish and then meet. There's a lot of things to look at. Again, very unprecedented territory, but again, based off that ruling, some of these districts are unconstitutional, so we're going to have to find a way to make sure that they're in line with the Supreme Court ruling.
Real quickly, you said it would take a challenge. Dan, can anybody challenge that?
I think, based on the Louisiana decision, it was just a resident of the state. So any resident of Montana who's a voter, been here, has resident status, been here for longer than a year, in good standing, could challenge, Montana's map per the Clay decision.
I know a lot more now than I did before. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. One thing we do, I think, see is that this will be ongoing. So it's hard to put a bow on it because it's not ready for packaging. Representative Braxton Mitchell, thank you, sir. Good luck to you in your race.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Dan Stusek, good to hear from you as well. Republican and former member of the Montana District and Apportionment Committee. Go Grizz, eh?
Yeah, we'll see you in Missoula this fall.
All right, take care.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.